Jay Hagedich, and welcome. Thank you for coming back in and joining us. My name is Jay Hodges. I'm a very proud friend of Sinn Féin. Really excited to have a conversation today. We're going to be talking with president of the Friends of Sinn Féin, Mark Guilfoyle. And before we get any further going along, I just want to kind of hear from Mark. So, Mark, tell me, how are you doing? How are things in Kentucky? What's happening with you?
Thank you, Jay. It's always good to spend time with you, and thank you for doing the series of interviews that you've been doing for us. They're very, very entertaining. I'm not sure I can, hold up to that standard, but Kentucky is great. We're in the midst of the invasion of the 17-year cicada right now. They're everywhere. They're all over the place. You can't walk on a sidewalk without stepping on a few.
And it's just quiet there, isn't it? It's just quiet. You're alone with your thoughts.
Yeah, it's really something. So a couple more weeks and they'll be on their way. But things are great down here along the Ohio River, right across from Cincinnati, Ohio. It's a great part of the country to live, work, and play.
Well, I'm excited for people to get to know you because I don't think that many will. Before we start talking about your role as the president of Friends of Sinn Féin, I kind of want to give people familiarity with you as a person. So real briefly, can you just talk about, where you're from, like how you grew up, kind of your family and all, did you grow up in a proud Irish Catholic American family? Like just kind of all of those things and set the stage for people.
Yeah. I had a very wonderful childhood. My mom and dad adopted five kids, and I'm the oldest of five adopted children. My dad was a union pipe fitter, local 392 out of Cincinnati. And, he would work 7 days a week, 10 hours a day during the winter on power plant jobs so he could take us on 7 week vacations in the summer. So my dad was very big on making sure that we traveled and that we realized that there's other people in the world who don't think and look like we do. And I treasure that, it's great that he gave us that experience. But yeah, I went to a Catholic high school. I went to Xavier University for college. I was educated by the Jesuits. And then I went to law school in Washington, D.C. at George Washington University. Got out of there in 1983 and came back to Kentucky. I always knew I wanted to come back to this area to practice law. And I've been here ever since.
Okay. Now, what kind of spurred you to either explore your Irish roots? I don't know if that's the best wording choice, but what kind of spurred you into learning more and kind of starting to get involved in all of those things? Where does that interest come from?
Well, primarily it comes from my mother, whose name was Mary Catherine, and her middle name was spelled K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. And she would always tell people that's the Irish spelling. So, my mom was always quick to brag about her Irish heritage. She had red hair. Her nickname was Mickey. I just grew up with that. And I'll never forget my senior year of high school. We were studying world history. And this was in 1976. And the very last page of this textbook had some detail on what was going on in Northern Ireland. I'm not sure they would refer to it as the Troubles, but that's what it was about. And I remember thinking that that's going on right now in this world. And, so a combination of my schooling and my mother's influence, I've just always been very proud to be Irish.
Now, you are... I'm going to use the term becoming enlightened right around the time of... the 80 hunger strike, then the 81 hunger strike. You've got internment going on, you've got imprisonment going on, like you have all the things that go into the trouble. As a young man living in Kentucky, what do you remember about that time? Like, what do you remember the most about kind of learning and hearing about, like, what is it that really kind of sits out in your mind during that, during those years?
Yeah, I talked about my high school, my senior year, and then when I got out of Xavier and went to law school, my first year of law school was 1980-81, and I was actually living away from home for the first time, and I don't know if you remember this, but in quick succession, Ronald Reagan was shot at the end of March in 1981, and they took him to George Washington University Medical Center. So I literally walked by the president while he was in the hospital going to class. And then on May 5, of course, Bobby Sands died. And about a week or so later, the Pope got shot. And I just remember thinking that, you know, is the world coming to an end? You know, these were big cataclysmic events. And, you know, as a 21-year-old at the time, thinking about Bobby Sands at 27, it really, really hit me and caused me to reflect and meditate. Do I believe in anything so strongly that I'd be willing to starve myself to death to fight for? And, you know, that was the start of a very long interest, if not fascination, with the struggle for civil rights in Northern Ireland.
That's amazing. I around that same age, when I started learning about this hunger strikes, that was one of the questions that I pondered a lot about myself. And I think that that's a very, I don't know about universal, but a very common thing to be thinking about. I always tell people, it always astonishes me, because they were basically at that age. Bobby was a little older, but still wasn't a 45-year-old man or whatever. I mean, he was still very young. So,
well, as somebody who was trained by the Jesuits, you know, when the famous story of him telling Father Fowle, you know, that in the Gospel of John, you know, Jesus said that there is no greater love than to lay down your life for your friends. And that's the essence of comradeship. You know, that I've come to find out, that's the essence of Sinn Feiners, you know, comrades in our party, comrades in our struggle. And, you know, for me, it really kind of goes back to Bobby Sands. That was a very big turning point in my life.
Now, you're in law school. Like, how do you get involved with Sinn Féin? Like, is it something that just kind of grew organically, or was there like one catalyst event? Like, what is it that kind of spurred you to get into getting involved?
Yeah, you know, from that point, 81, it really was another 14, 15 years. You know, I just followed events in Northern Ireland, you know, sometimes with dismay and really confusion on my part as to why things couldn't be righted. Because, you know, in the United States, that's kind of our, you know, if there's a wrong, you know, you right the wrong.
Yeah. Yeah,
it just was very frustrating that the wrongs couldn't be righted. So I followed it. And the next thing that really happened for me was the ceasefire by the IRA in 1994. Because I look back through my files, and it turns out that I, quote, joined the Friends of Sinn Féin in the summer of 95. And that was... it was, to me, if there was going to be an effort to try to achieve unity peacefully and democratically, and to have that alternative to armed conflict, that was something I wanted to be part of. And so I reached out and just picked up the phone and called the lady who ran the Washington, D.C. office. And she sent me a packet in the mail, you know, some things to read and some things to get up to speed on. And you know, I took that in 95, and then in 98, May of 98, I took my two oldest sons to New York City to see Jerry Adams at the Plaza Hotel. And, you know, this is right around the Good Friday Agreement, right? So, I mean, sure. There must have been 250 photographers in the room up there. And that was just something that I did on my own. I came into contact with a fellow named Larry Downs, who helped to form Friends of Sinn Féin, a lawyer in New York City. And, you know, just kind of struck up a friendship with him. You know, I'm a big believer in the world, the way that we're constructed and the technology and the communications. I believe you can meet anybody in the world. If you really want to meet somebody, you can meet them. I don't care where they are, where they're located on the earth. But it's all about taking the initiative. It's all about deciding, hey, that's something I want to get involved in. And that's a spirit that we try to, you know, live by with the Friends of Sinn Féin. We're looking for activists. We're looking for advocates. We're looking for comrades you know, to help the folks over in Ireland, you know, get to unity. So, you know, that was a big trip. I got to meet Jerry. You know, I had just read his book Before the Dawn, which came out in 1996, and we might come back to that later, but that was something where I actually got to meet Larry Downs. And at that point I told him, I said, Larry, look, if you ever want to have a Sinn Féin member come to Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky, I'd be happy to, you know, organize the events. I'd be happy to shepherd them around. And lo and behold, he took me up on that, Reed O'Hare, a couple years later, because in 2001, Martin McGuinness came to Northern Kentucky and to Cincinnati to ring the World Peace Bell. And that was the start of a series of visits that we had from Jerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, Jerry Kelly. And so that's kind of how I got myself activated. That was something I could do here in my own hometown to get these senior Sinn Féin representatives a platform, you know, to meet with people directly, to communicate their message directly without filter from the governments. You know, the governments had at the time and still have tremendous resources to put out their message or sometimes their propaganda. But it was great for McGuinness, Adams, Kelly to come over here and meet people and talk about what's really going on in Northern Ireland. That was it was a great experience.
So just a couple of quick things. I want to ask for some clarification. First off, you did not replace Jerry Adams' voice when he was speaking to people, which I believe was a custom at the time to make sure that.
Right.
Ah, good.
No, there was no article, whatever it is, 31, no censorship. George Clooney, by the way, is a Kentuckian. He's a distant cousin, and many people notice a resemblance. But
I was going to make a comment.
I thought you were. He would have been a good stand-in for Jerry, I think.
Now, you made a comment about Martin coming over and ringing the victory bell, and I really want you to, because at that time, that's right around the Good Friday Agreement and whatnot, but people may not know what the bell is. So can you just kind of touch on that entire thing just real briefly?
Well, yeah, it's called the World Peace Bell. It's in Newport, Kentucky, and it's the largest free swinging bell in the world. It was constructed in Nantes, France, and brought over here on a boat. It's a humongous bell. And, you know, Martin actually, you know, had a family history with family members working in a foundry. And so for him to see this bell was,
sure,
he just couldn't get over it. And the whole bell, the people behind it, they did it in order to promote world peace. So wasn't it great that we had Martin come over here to ring the bell? And then the next year, Jerry Adams came over and did the same thing. So it's a neat thing that we have right here in Northern Kentucky.
I love that. I think that's just an absolutely beautiful thing. You've now been involved for 20 plus years. And I kind of want to know what stands out to you? What strikes you through everything, all your experiences, everything you've done, and kind of just the whole thing about it? Like, what really stands out to you? And just every time you think about it, you just kind of shake your head in awe. Like, what is it?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, I'm a people person. Everybody I've met in Sinn Féin is a people person. You know, there's obviously a wide variety of personalities, but I've always been struck by how people in the party that I've met are curious. They're looking to, you know, improve their knowledge, to be curious about things. And, you know, what I was struck by, Martin McGuinness came over here three times, Jerry Adams three times, Jerry Kelly once. You know, when you're around these guys, either one-on-one or, and I shouldn't say guys, women as well, Reed O'Hare will kill me if I don't mention that. Struck by how positive they are, how there is a total lack of bitterness. you know, with people who have every right to feel some bitterness toward how they or their families or their neighbors have been treated. You never detect any of that. And I know it's genuine because you're there one-on-one and you see how they interact. You know, and it's the little things. You know, I remember when Martin McGuinness came to Cincinnati, we were walking downtown and he saw a men's clothing store and he said, "Do you mind if I go in?" You know, and so, no, why not? And he was wearing a Cincinnati Reds ball cap that somebody had given him on the visit. You know, this is March, you know, and the Reds would give you a green hat. And, you know, he's in a plaid shirt, just kind of looking through the racks. And he was a shopper, you know, and he was tickled that he could do something like that. A very small thing, but he got great joy out of doing it. And or Jerry Kelly came to the police memorial in Covington, Kentucky, and he gave a talk about policing in Northern Ireland. Jerry Adams, first time he came over, he gave a speech on civil rights. And I think it's a tour de force. And we had a father, Reverend Protestant minister, Fred Shuttlesworth, was an African-American who at the time lived in Cincinnati, but he walked with Martin Luther King and all the, you know, he's not a well-known name, but he was one of the close group of insiders around Dr. Martin Luther King. And he was good enough to come over and give the invocation before Jerry spoke. And, you know, just to see the acumen, the command of history, how articulate our people are, but really the down-to-earth nature. They love people, and they're forward-looking. You know, they don't want to dwell on the past. They're looking ahead. Where are we going? What's the trajectory we're on? And, you know, always coming back to how do we get the unity? And that's, I've just been struck by the singular focus on that issue for the last 20-plus years that I've been involved.
So I got to ask you this before we go any further. You have all of these amazing experiences with these world leaders and all these things. And it's always funny to me because a lot of people in your position would point to the power that they gain or that they feel or whatnot. And you always point to the personal stories of stuff. And I love that about you because I just think that's amazing. But I got to know, what is one simple story that you just love about your experience overall? Martin shopping is an amazing just personal glimpse into who he was as a man and as a person. But give me one Mark Guilfoyle story about your time as, because I love the fact that you actually talk about them as people as opposed to, you know, power or whatnot.
Well, you know, I could give you a whole bunch of them.
Over beers. I need one.
Yeah, Cincinnati is 4+ hours from Cleveland. And I remember one time Jerry came down here in Cincinnati and I was going to drive him up to Cleveland and then drive him back. Jack Kilroy and the folks in Cleveland had put together an event. And this is many, many years ago. Cell phones were still just kind of coming, you know, in vogue. And I got a friend of mine had a conversion van. So we put Jerry in the back so he could lay down on a bed, you know, and get a nap. So sure. Richard McCauley's in the front seat with me and I'm driving the van down I-71. And I made the mistake of looking at my phone. And Richard kind of looked over at me and his look was, that's not really a good idea. We've got the boss in the back here. And I'm like, I'll get back to that later. But Richard's just a great guy to be around, but he handled me very well at that moment.
So let me ask you this, as we as an organization kind of start to look forward and start to kind of prepare ourselves, let's start with what's next. Like, what is it that Friends of Sinn Féin and Sinn Féin as a party, but specifically the Friends of Sinn Féin, like what's next for us?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that I'm very big on is that, you know, I'm not a member of Sinn Féin. I'm not a policymaker. I take my cues from the folks in the party, work closely with Kieran Quinn, the North American representative from Sinn Féin. But what I would say is that, you know, we've made a real concerted effort with COVID to beef up our social media. We've really got a great Facebook page. Our weekly newsletter is as good as it's ever been. Twitter and, you know, the social media that we have out there. Again, like I said before, we're looking to generate activists. And these are people, you know, we all have our part to play, right? As Bobby Sands said. So, you know, if somebody in Atlanta, Georgia can be in contact with his or her state rep, congressional representative, U.S. senator, whatever it might be, you know, we have a real focus on, as an organization, of keeping congressional leaders informed about what's going on. Mary Lou McDonald has been doing a great job, you know, with Kieran's assistance, you know, briefing the people. And we're very nonpartisan, bipartisan. We, you know, we're not Democrat, Republican. I'm a registered independent, for that matter. But so we stay out of American politics, but we have to keep our elected leaders up to speed on what's going on, again, in an unfiltered way, to counter folks that have a jaded message to convey. But we're looking to get people to follow us, to, you know, be active in whatever way they can. We've got great followers in Nashville and Louisville and Cleveland and San Francisco and Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, I may have mentioned, but we want to grow that. And we do want to raise money to help fund our operations here in the States. But I would say our priority is to raise friends as much as it is to raise funds. Desi Mackin will kill me for saying that, but that's the reality. Desi's the money guy, but you know, we're real interested. It's so exciting right now. We're on the cusp. I mean, people are talking about a unity referendum as though it's going to happen. It's just when and what's it going to look like. That's new. You know, as Jerry Adams likes to say, it's a doable project. It's no longer an aspiration or something that we whisper. You know, this is out in the open, and it's not just Sinn Féin. You know, unity is not going to happen without Sinn Féin, but it's only going to happen with people outside of Sinn Féin as well. So we get that, and I think our people are pretty good about managing that reality.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not certain that a lot of people in the States understand that this generation could actually be the first to see a united Ireland. Like it's actually that close. It's not something that is our grandkids, you know, or whatnot. Like we are so close to it right now. This is something that we could actually see in our lifetime, which is unheard of. I don't think my grandparents ever thought they would see a united Ireland in their lifetime. I just don't think my grandfather ever thought he would see it.
That's really well said, Jay. And, you know, the thing that I'm just so excited about is the level of talent that we have with Mary Lou and Pierce and Michelle up north, and gosh, our TDs are, you know, we have people who are eminently capable of running the country, and that's going to happen at some point. And we don't have to worry about the competence and the integrity, you know, to bring kind of a clean, you know, non-corrupt method to governing in the Republic, North and South.
Now, let me ask you this. How can people in North America, I'm going to include my Canadian brothers and sisters in this, like, how can we get involved? How can we, you've kind of laid out a good plan for the Friends of Sinn Féin, but how is it that we can actually start to get involved and start to get into it?
Go to our website, friendsofsinnfein.com. It's really well done. It's easy to navigate. Sign up for our newsletter, and we'll get you active. You know, if you pick up the phone and call Mark Guilfoyle in Northern Kentucky. We'll figure it out. And that's happened. You know, we just had a meeting with a fellow last week who, you know, called out of the blue, and Kieran put him right to work. So it's real easy to get involved. It's just, you just have to kind of take the time to, I'm going to do it. You know, it's something I've been thinking about for a couple of years, but I'm going to do it. Right now is a very good time to get involved because we're on the cusp of something really big.
Yeah, I totally agree. Many hands make light work. So if we can get half these people to even just take the first couple of steps, I think that really, really helps the cause.
Yeah.
Now, let me finish up by asking you my favorite question to ask. And every time I do an interview, I'm an avid reader. I love to read and learn. So if you bumped into a total stranger on the street and they said, I want to learn more, what is the book you recommend, the podcast, like just kind of what do you say? Like, this is something that you should be familiar with. Like, what do you recommend?
Well, in terms of books, you know, I would say, and again, this kind of fits, you know, my experience, the book by Jerry Adams called Before the Dawn, which came out in 1996. It's his autobiography. You know, it's about his upbringing. It's about the kind of person he is. You know, and it came out 2 years before the Good Friday Agreement. So, gosh, the world changed, you know, 2 years after this book came out. But I would say my all-time favorite book would have to be Death of a Naturalist, which is the first collection of poetry by Seamus Heaney, who is a good Derry poet. And I'm actually got a copy that is signed by both Seamus Heaney and the other, in my mind, famous Derry poet, Martin McGinnis. So that's an absolute treasure that I have in that book, and every poem in there is outstanding and stellar, and Heaney's whole body of work is amazing. So I recommend anything by him.
What's the name of that?
Death of a Naturalist. It's got my favorite poem, Midterm Break, about his 4-year-old brother being killed by a car in front of their house. And, you know, it'll bring a tear to your eye the way it ends. But, oh, and there's another good book, Jay, The Greatest Beer Run Ever, written by Chick Donahue. He may know something about your labor union, and his son, Brian, is a good guy. But yeah, a true story about how Chick, on a dare almost, kind of went over to Vietnam to deliver beer to army soldiers who were from Inwood, the neighborhood in New York. Somebody had the idea at a bar one night, you know what we ought to do is we ought to send them a beer. So Chick, who was in the Merchant Marine, he got on a boat, he went to Vietnam, and you know, he was there for the Tet Offensive. Actually tracked down some of these guys.
I've been telling everybody about that book. I bought copies for my fathers, who both were Vietnam, are Vietnam veterans. I've told everybody, like, you're going to read this, and the whole way through it, you're going to be like, there's no way in hell. Like, there's just no, and it is 100% true. And people who don't know that story, I'm going to be honest with you right now, you're going to know about it soon, because it is a fantastic fast read. That's funny. Although, you know, Brian Donahue is, you know, let's just be honest. Like, he's not.
I hear great things about him.
he's coming along. We're hoping we hope he gets a little better. That's great. And I, you know, it's actually funny. You made a recommendation for, I'm not a big poetry person, but I'm actually excited that it's a book that I've never heard of, nor have I have any exposure to. So I will be looking forward to getting Death of a Naturalist, to increase my own knowledge. I think that's an awesome recommendation.
You know, Martin McGinnis wrote some very good poetry in my mind, and both Heaney and Martin were from Derry. Of course, Robert Frost was from Derry, New Hampshire, right? So good things happen in Derry, I guess.
Good things happen in Derry. Wow. I can't say thank you enough. First of all, thank you so much for everything that you do. I don't think you ever get thanked enough for the incredible amount of hard work and dedication that you have had to this organization and to making things kind of move and being better every day. And I mean, from the bottom of my heart, like Mark, you do a thankless job and you do it exceptionally well every single day. And I mean, it really honestly is just a lot of fun to be able to work with you and be able to see kind of where stuff is. So thank you very much for that. But thank you very much for taking the time to come on with us. I encourage everybody here to buy a beer for Mark at some point and listen to him tell stories, because I got to be honest with you, it's the most entertaining, you know, $4 you're going to spend any night of the week. You have such an incredible life and such a great storyteller, and I love having you, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
We really do
appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Thanks for helping us out in this important way. I'm not that important, but some of the guests you've had have just—it's been outstanding to hear from them, you know, directly. So thank you for doing what you do.
It is my pleasure to be doing these interviews. So thank you so much. I encourage everybody to pick up not only Chinky Donahue's book, but also Death of a Naturalist, Before the Dawn. I encourage everybody to go to Friends of Sinn Féin website and get involved and join. And until we speak again, thank you so much for tuning in. Slán.